Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf, joined by Gavin Shaw, as per usual. We have a good show for you guys today because there's a little bit of news. A Woj bomb dropped, gave us some cool new tidbits on the Anthony Davis situation.
Yeah, that's right, Alex. Adrian Wojnarowski reporting on what the Pelicans would specifically require in an Anthony Davis package, or at least what David Griffin ideally wants. So we'll get into whether or not the Knicks have the assets to fulfill that, or whether they need to involve a second team. And then we'll talk a little bit about what the rest of the league can offer the Pelicans and whether or not that tops the Knicks group.
And then finally, we'll end off talking a little bit about Game 5 of the Finals. We've already given our breakdowns last week of the two Finals teams and how the Knicks can look to emulate them, but there is news that Kevin Durant might be coming back for Game 5 tonight, so we will talk about that a little bit and how that might affect his legacy overall and how one result versus the other, as far as Golden State's concerned, could maybe affect his desire to come to the Knicks. All that coming up and more on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. We are breaking down some good, new, juicy deets about the Pelicans and their trade pursuit for Anthony Davis today. There's some new info available. First off, though, we hope that you guys are listening to us on the Himalaya podcast app. It is free. It is super easy to use. It has every single podcast you love or are searching for. And they have great features like episodic shareable playlists where you, listeners, can build podcast playlists by the episode and customize it just like a playlist of songs and share it through social, text, and email. So be sure to find Himalaya and download it on the App Store or Google Play Store. And don't forget to follow Locked On Knicks, of course, once you get there. Or any of your favorite Locked On podcasts. Maybe you like Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On Warriors right now, you know, because trying to scout Kevin Durant, whatever. Be sure to follow all your favorites. At any rate, oh, maybe also Locked On Pelicans, because that brings us to our first item of the day, Gavin. There was a report from Adrian Wojnarowski today of ESPN, and it basically said that David Griffin is, it sounds like, given up on his idea of trying to sell Anthony Davis on staying with the Pelicans and with Zion Williamson and trying to build something there with him. For a couple quick pull quotes here out of the article, Woj says, Griffin is pursuing a combination of assets that include an all-star player, a young player with all-star potential, and two first-round picks, league sources said. Those wants are on a sliding scale. For example, the better the player, the softer the requests on the draft picks, and vice versa. In whatever deal the Pelicans make, Griffin wants the assets to continue building a Western Conference playoff team around guard Jrue Holiday and the projected number one overall pick, forward Zion Williamson, sources said. So it looks like Griffin probably will not look to move Jrue Holiday and is trying to, rather than rebuild, mostly just retool from what it sounds like.
Yeah, which from a Knicks perspective is almost too bad, because in the back of my mind, I had sort of a Hail Mary play where the Knicks literally trade everyone and get both Holiday and Davis, because Holiday would actually sort of be the perfect point guard on a team led by Davis and Kevin Durant. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, I guess the more interesting part from a Knicks perspective is what this says in regards to how the Pelicans will view the, at least right now, what the best package that they can put together is, because I think, Alex, I don't want to speak for you, but at least for me, I was sort of the opinion that, like, New Orleans was just going to go as young as possible, and, like, they were going to try to be fun, and they were going to maybe keep Jrue Holiday to be competitive, but the idea would sort of be just getting as many players on Zion's timeline as possible, and this is a little bit of a shift for that, from that, where Griffin is, I guess, kind of trying to strike a balance between maybe being a 4 or 5 seed right off the bat and being competitive immediately around Holiday and Zion with getting a current All-Star while also getting someone on Zion's current trajectory that can sort of age with him and also be a complimentary piece on that team. And all in all, I mean, I can't help but look at this as sort of a slight negative for the Knicks, because the reality is they don't have that guy on their roster currently, like someone who could make an All-Star team next year. The interesting part of this is the Pelicans, and we're going to get into this a little bit more next segment, they sort of seem to think that no team has that combination of assets, and it's a rare thing to have. I mean, a young star and someone currently in their prime that are both available simultaneously, and they're willing to involve a third team, and that might be the type of path the Knicks have to go down, and it's fortunate the Knicks have a whole lot of picks, and they could potentially make something like that work.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny to look at, you know, from the outside now, sort of, because, you know, you and I had, you know, already had, before the draft lottery, when Zion still seemed like a possibility for the Knicks, we'd had so many discussions about, like, you know, would it be, if the Knicks legitimately had two stars coming in, if they had Kevin Durant and, let's say, Kyrie Irving coming in, would it be more advantageous to just keep Zion than to trade him for someone like Anthony Davis? Because Zion just seems like he's going to have that level of impact right away in the NBA, where you don't necessarily even have to, you know, like, trade him for someone more established, because it seems like, based off how he plays the game, he should be able to establish himself right away. And he has a proper, like, complementary style of game that, while he's kind of developing himself into a, like, de facto superstar, he can contribute in so many other ways. So that, you know, it's interesting to just kind of see that from another perspective now that the Pelicans are guaranteed Zion, you know, that they're thinking along those lines as well. Like, well, maybe we don't have to, like, even though we have this star on our team that could still, you know, that we kind of have to trade, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to stop trying to be competitive. And, you know, maybe with Zion, and if we can add the right pieces, we could still put together a team that could at least make the playoffs, get Zion playoff experience from year one, and just kind of continue building from there. So it's kind of an interesting process to see now. And I'm curious to see how it's going to play out. I, like you said, I'm a little less bullish on the Knicks' chances at this point, unfortunately, as far as making a deal, because they definitely don't have that established all-star piece that they're looking for. And even the Knicks, like, draft assets and things of that nature, and their young players that are on the roster, I don't know if any of it, like, screams all-star to me. But there's definitely guys that they have that could be potential all-stars. And maybe, you know, as the article mentioned, maybe, like, a lack of a true all-star could be replaced with potential all-stars, and that would make everything all better. But I guess we'll kind of just have to see how this all plays out over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, one thing I want to throw out there that I think is sort of an advantage unique to the Knicks is there's not another team in the league that can offer, unless the Sixers want to trade Joel Embiid out of the blue, there's not really another team in the league that can offer a defensive piece like Mitchell Robinson. And I do think it would be pretty appealing if you're the Pelicans to have that type of dominant, versatile rim protector next to Zion Williamson. And we were just a few weeks ago kind of drooling about it from a Knicks perspective. It sort of breaks my heart to talk about it happening on another team. But that combination, for especially with two guys so young, like, I mean, you have those two together for 10 seasons, that pretty much, I like, almost regardless of what other pieces you want to put around them, with Jrue Holiday, that's already one of the top point guard defenders in the NBA, but let's just, even throwing Holiday at the mix, I think that guarantees you, like, a top five defense in the NBA for 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, there's just no other team, and we're projecting a little bit with Zion, obviously, because for all of his talent, we still haven't seen him in the league, but there's no other team in the league that has two defensive pieces quite that versatile in terms of rim. Like, obviously the Warriors have a ton of perimeter guys, but in terms of rim protection and switchability and just ability to cover a ridiculous amount of ground in the modern NBA, when if you're playing for championships, you're going to be going against teams with a type of shooting and star power that just puts such an impossible amount of stress and would break even some of the better defenders in the NBA time after time after time. If you have two pieces like Zion and Mitch, That just gives you so much flexibility in terms of what you can put around them, and it gives you a real chance against teams like the Warriors and teams like the Rockets when the vast majority of the league just doesn't have any type of answer for them. So I do think that could be kind of appealing for New Orleans. And then just the fact that RJ and Zion are seem like, if not best friends, are really, really close. Like, if I'm New Orleans, and obviously, the way NBA contracts work at this point, the way the incentive structure works, like, they have a pretty good shot at keeping Zion for at least 5 years regardless, but you want to, like, give yourself the best chance for locking him in further. I mean, trading for his best friend or one of his best friends is just a pretty good start for that. So I just want to make clear, like, there are, like, still reasons, like, the Knicks package could be extremely appealing, even if it's not necessarily in the exact archetype of player that David Griffin is looking for.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just that scares me off is just that the very first thing on the list is they want an all-star player.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at that and I'm like, well, we don't have that.
Right.
So yeah. Unless there's some team out there that's willing, you know, to take on some of the young assets the Knicks have and send off, you know, someone who's an all-star or borderline all-star. And you know, I'm sure there are some of those around the league, although it wouldn't be a surefire, like, every year all-star. It would have to be someone who's, like, borderline. But, you know, those sort of teams probably exist and those sort of deals probably exist. It complicates things a little bit. But you're right. I mean, it's definitely RJ and Mitch, if you send both of them over, they definitely fit the mold of young players with all-star potential. And you know, they shouldn't be overlooked, you know, especially because it's not like Jrue Holiday is, like, ancient. Either, you know, I know I don't know his exact age. I know he's in the 27, 28 range, I think, at this point. So he's still got, at least a few good years left on him to try to, you know, kind of bring these guys along. And then maybe by the time that he's on his next contract and, you know, taking a more team-friendly deal where New Orleans could keep him around, you know, Zion and RJ and Mitch would have matured into, you know, one of the better young cores in the West. And they'd be ready to, like, truly, you know, make some noise and sign like a big free agent or something and, you know, actually do something. Although that still just brings, unfortunately, the same point that always comes up for the Pelicans, which is that, you know, free agents just don't really go there. Yeah. And that was part of the problem with AD being there. And part of the reason he wants out now, I think, is because they were just never able to attract the high level of, you know, talent needed to compete in the West to come play with him. So I don't know, I guess it's all very complicated, but I do think the Knicks could still be in it. This is probably a good opportunity to take our first break, though, because then we can come back. Bobby Marks and Kevin Pelton of ESPN, in conjunction with Woj's report, wrote sort of a little detailed article about what they think some of the best deals that could be offered to New Orleans would be. And so we'll come back. We'll discuss that article a little bit. Give sort of our own takes on the other team's offers versus the Knicks' offers and get into that with you guys in a sec.
Welcome back in to Locked On Knicks. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf here to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. What a trio. All right. So with that, we just sort of prefaced it, but Kevin Pelton and former Nets front office I think that's the right term, Bobby Marks, sort of wrote an article on the different teams that could potentially get involved in an Anthony Davis deal. And in regards to the Knicks specifically, they basically said that they're not particularly high on what the Knicks can offer the Pelicans and noted, and this was a direct quote, the deciding factor for the Knicks chances will be how high the Pelicans are on RJ Barrett, which is something we've talked about on this podcast and will certainly be interesting. And given the additional context that Zion's relationship with Barrett and how that would sort of immediately ingratiate the Pelicans front office to Zion and how that would maybe add an extra layer of appeal to Barrett, even if they don't totally love his potential as a player. They also mentioned, I thought this was pretty interesting, Alex, because in the Woj article, the four teams that were discussed were the Knicks, Nets, Lakers, Clippers in regards to Davis, but Pelton and Marks also note Denver is sort of a wild card, and that is something that Wojnarowski kind of hinted at without specifically saying, mentioning that a couple of smaller market teams were just sort of battering around the idea of trading for Davis kind of in the mold of what Toronto did with Kawhi Leonard and what Oklahoma City did with Paul George, and just banking on their infrastructure to convince Davis to stay. And they would be kind of fascinating if Toronto got involved, because they certainly have the combination of assets to, at least to some degree, fulfill what New Orleans is looking for in Jamal Murray as sort of the quote-unquote current all-star level talent, and then Michael Porter Jr. as the young guy who, if you want to be generous, you could say has all-star potential, and then further pieces to flesh it out, like a Gary Harris or Will Barton in terms of high-level role players that could sort of immediately contribute on one of the top teams in the West, as they did the year before. The Nuggets don't have an ideal amount of picks, but they could trade their 2022 first, in that double draft. So they're just one of five teams we listed out here that could theoretically put together an Anthony Davis deal in addition to the four I previously mentioned.
Yeah, the Nuggets are the ones that, when I was reading that article, kind of scared the crap out of me. You know, because I was looking at it and I'm like, ooh, that's that's a something that could make sense. You know what I mean? Like that's a deal that could definitely, like give the Pelicans pretty much everything they want without having to involve another team. Other than like the draft capital wouldn't be that great, but the players themselves, they can definitely, you know, offer up better than pretty much any other team. I'll read the exact quote from this was Bobby Marks's paragraph here. He said, I would peg Denver as the lone wild card team here. The Nuggets have the right mix of players, Gary Harris, Torrey Craig, Will Barton, Mike Porter Jr., and Paul Millsap, that would give the Pelicans the option of retooling instead of rebuilding. Nikola Jokic, of course, is untouchable, and I would be hesitant to offer Jamal Murray. We've seen a trend in back-to-back seasons of surprise teams taking the risk to acquire all-star players on expiring deals. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. In both cases, the reward was greater than the risk, and Toronto's run within a game of the championship might change teams' thinking about acquiring an expiring contract. I definitely, like, agree with that. I know, like, Millsap makes a ton of money, which is not ideal, but, you know, what Denver could offer to do in that case, because Millsap is on a team option this year for like $30 million, which is, I think it's about what Davis makes, maybe even a little more, this season in the last year of his big extension. So, you know, that would basically even that money out. But then, you know, the Pelicans could treat this kind of like a salary dump as well, send over someone like Solomon Hill, and then, you know, bring back any one of those, you know, young players or, you know, the role player types. Jamal Murray, I mean, much do it kind of suck to trade him. There were stretches this year where, like, Monty Morris was doing really well for Denver, and he was playing really well. So, you know, you could potentially slot him in as the point guard there, which, you know, maybe wouldn't be ideal, but who really cares when you have Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic down low. And then, you know, Will Barton is like has proven himself to be a really, really good NBA player. So that would kind of fit their role of a youngish guy who still has like some, he's not that young anymore, but he's still, you know, he's proven to be a good NBA player on a winning team. And then just, you know, the guys like Gary Harris and Torrey Craig and all them. And then of course you mentioned MPJ. Those are all pretty good pieces. I mean, if there's one team that wants to really take a shot at this and not even necessarily tank like their infrastructure, if AD would leave in theory after a year, the Nuggets would probably be the team. Because even if they unloaded a few of these guys over to New Orleans, it would suck. But they're like so stocked up on young players that it really, you know, it would hurt, but it would be worth the risk, because that front court of Jokic and AD would basically be like a steroided up version of the Boogie Cousins and AD front court that seemed like it was finally kind of starting to work right before Cousins got hurt last year.
Yeah, and Jokic is so versatile. I mean, he can make that work in so many different ways. I mean, Boogie had the benefit of being a pretty good passer and shooter, but Jokic is just on a different level in both of those aspects. And you take into account that Jokic, I mean, seems to be at his most comfortable passing the ball, like those two, that would just be like, can you imagine those two running pick and rolls together, like with either one as a ball handler? It would be like arguably the most exciting combination of two big guys on the same team in NBA history. And I know that sounds like an overstatement, but you can go through it. And like, I don't know if there was ever two dudes on the same team that matched that diversity of skill set? Because you can already make the case Jokic is maybe the best passing big man ever, or at least in the mix. And Davis is just the type of athlete like we've never ever seen at the power forward position before. So that would, I mean, just from an objective basketball perspective, that would be a whole lot of fun. And Denver, I mean, really is the perfect team to swing for the fences like that, because they actually just flat out have the depth of assets that they could trade away a whole bunch of guys and still win 60 games with that group next year. So I'm with you that they're kind of scary. And if I'm Denver, I don't know about you. I'd kind of want to take that chance and go for that swing. I mean, especially like you see what happened with Toronto. You see what happened with, Oklahoma City, obviously not working out quite as well, but they ultimately got Paul George to resign. Like there's a proven track record of that working and guys getting comfortable and finding that like they love winning and they can be comfortable in a situation where the basketball situation is great, even if it's not their ideal city to live in. And if I'm the Nuggets, my thinking on it is, you know what, like we have a really good group of young guys, and maybe we're really high on Michael Porter and we think we could take a leap up. But I think this season sort of showed them. I mean, even as those guys continue to mature, they're probably, just a notch below in terms of frontline talent, what you need to win a title. And Davis would obviously sort of flip that and give them enough.
Yeah. You know, and the thing too, that stick on a small thing of what you just said there, the thing that I think is happening in the NBA now, as far as like, and it sucks, you know, this is another thing that kind of sucks for the Knicks, but as far as markets are concerned, it doesn't seem like being in a big market anymore necessarily, like, you know, gets you more endorsements, so to speak, than being in a small market. I mean, you've got guys like Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, and he's like in a zillion commercials, and he has his own shoe line with Jordan Brand. I mean, he's got like the whole world for him as far as endorsements are concerned. And during the off season, he can live in New York if he wants to, or live in LA, or live wherever the hell he wants to live during the off season. He doesn't have to stay in Oklahoma City. It's not like in your contract that says like must live and, you know, spend 90% of time in the city that you play basketball in. You know, these guys are, even before LeBron went to LA, which, you know, he went there mostly so he could be around business interests that he has specifically rooted in LA, which is different than just like endorsement deals and stuff. But like even before that, he had a huge home in LA. He spent most of his time not during the basketball season in LA. And, you know, that's ultimately, he just decided to move his life there because if he was playing his home games there, he could be closer to his production company and all that. But like, for most guys, that doesn't matter. Most guys aren't at the point of their lives yet, like LeBron, or at the wealth level or the, you know, the ambition level that he's at as far as trying to start like a movie empire after his playing days and stuff like that. So that's not as important to most guys anymore. And that's, you know, that's something that can be taken into account with that situation, where if AD is really just desperate to get on a good team where he can win, then, you know, maybe he goes to the Nuggets and they win at a really high level and either, you know, get to a Western Conference Finals, which would be further than Davis has ever gotten, get to an NBA Finals maybe, and that might totally change his opinion on things.
Yeah, and let's just quickly go through a couple of the other options. The other three teams outside of the Knicks and Nuggets in the article mentioned are the Nets, Lakers, Clippers. The Nets I don't want to spend too much time on because I think we're going to do an episode later this week with the Locked On Nets guys. I'm debating the Knicks versus Nets package. But Alex, I wanted to give you a little bit of a spotlight here because you took the time to do some research. Because initially I was like, okay, well, the Nets are like one of the few teams that sort of clearly fulfills all the prerequisites for a trade. They have D'Angelo Russell, who made an all-star team last year. They have Caris LeVert, who I think could be an all-star down the road, or if not just a notch below that type of player. And then they have not two first-round picks, but they just traded away two, but they could trade their 2022 first. And they have Rodion Skurucz, who proved in his rookie year to be a pretty valuable guy, and someone who I think, if he was in this year's draft, with what you knew about him, would probably go like just outside the top 10. So that's sort of an interesting piece. And then they have a couple complimentary guys in Jared Allen and Joe Harris, who you could say like, all right, you want to throw in like one final thing to sort of elevate this trade over what other teams can offer. They have that as well. But I think, as you found, it's not as easy as just signing and trading D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. I've like, you know, I did a little bit of research into it, and this, I feel like this comes up every year where teams have restricted free agents, and this, you know, this is again another one of those situations where, given how broken the Porzingis situation was, it's pretty good that the Knicks dealt with it how they did, because otherwise, if they would have hit this offseason, things could have gotten messier. You know, if Porzingis would have wanted to sign with some other team and the Knicks would try to finagle, if they were trying to finagle a sign and trade or something, things could have gotten really difficult for them. But it, basically what would have to happen for D'Angelo Russell to be included in this is he would have to hold himself back from signing any offer sheets with any other teams, until, you know, the Nets and Pelicans had dealt with whatever they were going to deal with. He would then have to consent to signing and trading to the Pelicans and then, you know, sign that contract and be part of the deal. But like, if he's not into the idea of playing with the Pelicans and he's like, oh, well, I'd rather sign with, I don't know. Like if he's just like, I'll just sign some offer sheet somewhere else and make you either match me, cause I'd like to stay in Brooklyn. Like if you're not going to outright re-sign me, I'll make you match me or lose me for nothing. He could do it that way. He could, you know, just sign with some other team and just walk there. But unless he explicitly wants to go to New Orleans, they can't do that. The other thing, you would pose this question to me like before the show, and I looked it up real quick too, was like, could, you know, let's assume that he signs an offer sheet with it, just for shits and giggles. We'll say the Knicks, right? He signs an offer sheet with the Knicks, and then the Nets match it. Could the Nets then trade him this season? And the answer to that is no as well, in theory, because they would have to wait first off until – I'm not 100% positive if it's December 15th or January 15th, because there's one that's traditionally for newly signed free agents. That's December 15th. And I think January 15th is players that were signed using exceptions. So I think they would have to wait till January 15th to trade him, if I'm not right. I'm not 100% on that. But at any rate, he would have a no trade clause for the whole first year of his contract as well, if he gets signed as a restricted free agent, or matched as a restricted free agent, I should say, by the Nets. So they wouldn't be able to just like turn around then and halfway through the season be like, oh, New Orleans, hold on to Anthony Davis, and then we'll ship you D'Angelo Russell. It wouldn't be able to go down that way, because Russell would have to actually like consent to it. So really, like, in this situation, for Russell to be part of any of it, he has to give his consent, pretty much.
Yeah. Which, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe playing with Zion Williamson is pretty appealing, but for whatever reason, isn't that kind of weird that no one wants to go to New Orleans? Like, I mean, I guess it's more of like a city you want to visit for a weekend than you want to live in if you're an NBA player. But like everyone knows, I don't know, I've never been to New Orleans, but everyone always talks about it as like one of the best cities in America. And like, it just seems like everyone wants out. But I get that it's not necessarily the most basketball-centric city.
From what I understand, yeah. And that's thing one. I was about to say, the first thing is that it's a football city, you know, that they're really into the Saints and not nearly as much into the Pelicans, and also really into like LSU football and stuff like that. You know, like it's very much like a football town. But then on top of that, I mean, if anyone that listens is from New Orleans or lives there or whatever, they can feel free to let me know. But from what I understand, the touristy part of New Orleans is great, like the French Quarter and all that. But you know, if you're not there just to be like a tourist and get like slammed every night, it's not like the craziest city in the world. Like it doesn't really compare to like, you know, New York or something, as far as just general availability of things to do that, you know, aren't necessarily just like going out and eating really good food and drinking a lot. So,
right.
But that's just what I've heard. I've never been. I'd like to go someday, but who knows?
Well, we can see. We can see if D'Lo likes it when the Nets maybe try to pull that off. All right, and then the last two teams were the Lakers and the Clippers. I think we can skip talking about the Lakers because it seems like, the Pelicans, that would be sort of like a worst-case scenario, that they'd have to come back with their tail between their legs and say, okay, we'll take your Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo, Hart, four first-round picks package. So obviously the Lakers ending up with the fourth pick makes that a little more appealing. Again, I think New Orleans will opt to go a different direction if they can. And the Clippers, sort of in the same vein as the Nuggets, I think they have one of the better packages just in terms of hitting the prerequisites. David Griffin and the Pelicans seem to be setting forward. They have a couple of guys who are, if not quite, are all-star level players, maybe just a notch below in Danilo Gallinari and Lou Williams. They have a guy with pretty clear all-star potential in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who really proved his mettle late in the season and in that first round series against the Warriors. He's a guy I like a lot on a personal level. And while I wouldn't personally put him in a Mitch tier, I think guys around the league in terms of how they view him, like maybe would put him close to Mitch or certainly in that conversation. And they have the extra benefit of having a great first round pick to offer, in the Heat deal. And that's something that, I mean, I think is pretty unique amongst all these teams, because the very premise, with all these trades and the holdup, I think, with so many of these trades is like, okay, you suck now and like your first round pick on paper is really valuable, but within the context of this deal, you're going to get really, really good. So why would I want your two first round picks when they're both going to be in the high 20s? And the beauty of the Clippers is, again, they have that unprotected Heat pick that's gotten bandied around the league and traded, I think, three separate times now, from the Suns to the Sixers to the Clippers, that is totally unprotected, I believe, next season. So that is certainly a big asset. And then the fact that they could just throw in Landry Shamet and Montrezl Harrell, who in terms of how throw-ins go, I think are just about as good as the Pelicans can hope for. Both guys who legitimately project as really high-level role players, if not more, in the NBA. So I think from like kind of an objective perspective, like I might like the Clippers package more than anyone else. I guess the one case you could make to the contrary is or do any of those individual pieces have the same upside as a Mitchell Robinson or an RJ Barrett or Jamal Murray or a D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah, and I'd probably say, I mean, at least as it pertains to Mitch and RJ, I'd say that, like, as far as out of all these teams that we've talked about, as far as like all-star potential, like ceiling, you know, type discussion, I think the Knicks actually have the better offer here. The other thing that the Knicks can offer, which is good, is potentially a mix, to your point about the draft picks, the Knicks can potentially offer a mix of their own and others' draft picks too, which is another thing that, you know, other than the Clippers, no other team really in this can do, because the Knicks can offer, like, say, theirs and Dallas's pick in 1 year. You know, if they wanted to do, say, 2021, and say, you can have ours and Dallas's pick for that year, and then there's, you know, a decent chance, you know, maybe something goes wrong for one of our two teams. If that happens, then, you know, you get a lottery pick. Maybe in, by some, you know, stroke of luck for, not for the Knicks or Dallas, but some stroke of luck for the Pelicans, both of them become lottery picks or something. And with the, you know, new lottery odds, it becomes more attractive to have, you know, even a team that ends up the 11th worst or whatever to have their pick. So, yeah, but the Clippers, I think, other than, you know, what we already talked about with Denver being kind of like a crazy wild card option, the Clippers definitely have a package that could be, you know, pretty good there as well, because Williams and Gallinari are like the, like, I guess, like, prototypical non-all-star but kind of all-star caliber players in the NBA. You know, they're consistently in the 20-point per game range. They're plus players. You know, Gallo has turned into a pretty good role player. More than a role player, like a borderline star at this point in his career. Williams is like the star that just never starts. He just, you know, he can be a star as long as he's a sixth man, and he's a pretty good piece. So, I mean, they could definitely put together an attractive package, I think.
Yeah, they're certainly one of my favorites. All right, we're going to spend a whole lot more time discussing all of this and as these trades sort of become more realistic, because it's worth noting, and I'm not sure if we even mentioned this in the first segment. It sounds like New Orleans, and I don't know how realistic this is, but especially if they're going to trade with a team that's geared around this year's pick, so specifically the Lakers and the Knicks, they'd like to get the deal done before the NBA draft, so they have time to interview prospects and figure out exactly who they'd want at each of those spots. So there is a chance that this happens pretty quickly. I think more realistically, it'll end up happening after the draft, and the Knicks and Lakers will just sort of be forced to make their best guess at which guy has the most valuable to New Orleans. For the Knicks, it's pretty obvious. It's probably RJ Barrett. And for the Lakers, I think they're going to end up taking Darius Garland regardless, and maybe the Pelicans end up really liking him. But that's certainly something to watch out for, that this could maybe happen a little bit quicker than we even anticipated. And if it doesn't, that'll maybe give you more of an idea on where the Pelicans are leaning, or we'll just tell you that a deal couldn't get done in that amount of time. Regardless, we'll take a break. We'll come back because we actually went really long here for one short final segment on game 5 of the NBA Finals and Kevin Durant coming back and how that affects his legacy and his odds of potentially being a Knick next year. That next on Locked On Knicks.
All right, welcome back to the third and final segment of Locked On Knicks. Of course, today's show is brought to you by Grip 6 Belts. Grip 6 Belts are ultra lightweight with no holes and no flap, and they make a great Father's Day gift. Grip 6 has a special offer for you today at grip6.com/lock. That's G-R-I-P, the number 6.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E. Okay, so Gavin, there's big news. Since we started recording this, when we recorded the intro, it was still speculation. Now it is official. Woj tweets out that Golden State's Kevin Durant plans to play in Game 5 tonight. League sources tell ESPN. So what are we getting out of this? Like, what do you think? So let's say he comes back tonight. They win this game on the road in Toronto, and they bring it back to Golden State, and then they win. And, you know, let's just say in theory they win the three games, come back from the 3-1 deficit, win the finals, and pull off the best comeback since – the year before Durant when the Cavs won the finals. What does this do for him, like, for his legacy? And then, you know, what does it do for him wanting to come to the Knicks, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I had a stronger take on this, because I can kind of see it going both ways. On one hand, that would sort of be Kevin Durant finally putting a stamp on the Warriors, and you could say, like, oh, okay, that's ridiculous. Like, I mean, he's won the last two finals MVPs, and he's clearly, like, when the going's gotten the toughest, like, he's been their best guy each of the last 2 years. But, and this sounds weird to say, the Cavs team they played in 2017 was really, really, really good. And I agree with the take of Zach Lowe and others that that was sort of, like, I think probably one of the better teams in recent NBA history by the time they fully hit their stride for the playoffs, and was just sort of stymied by the fact that the Warriors were, I mean, at probably their peak, like still as young as could be, everyone in their prime, with Durant at his absolute freshest, and just ran into an absolute buzzsaw. But I think this would be a little different, just because this is the first time since Durant's gotten there that the Warriors, at least in the finals, not so discounting that Rockets series from last year, the Warriors have been in legit peril. And it would be such a clear delineation between not having Durant. Okay, they're down 3-1, and, like, I mean, the last two games, like, haven't looked like they've had much of a shot. Versus Durant coming back and them winning the series. So that would really assert the narrative that, like, this is Durant's team, and he's sort of the guy in Golden State. And on one side, that could sort of be appealing to Kevin and just be like, you know what, like, if this is my squad and, like, we're as good as anyone in the NBA, like, why wouldn't I stay here? Why wouldn't I want to win 6-7 titles maybe and just keep doing this and stay on top of the basketball world and sort of be in basketball nirvana where all the pressure's off of him? But at the same time, by pulling this off, his legacy would sort of be secured. Like, he did it. He won an NBA Finals under extreme circumstances, playing injured, putting together a comeback that's only been done once in the history of the NBA. On the other hand, I think that would sort of free him to go, because he kind of accomplished everything he needed to in Golden State. Like, the Warriors fans, like any Warriors fan who bitched about him leaving at that point, like, shouldn't be a follower of the NBA anymore. That would just be nuts. And he would leave in such, like, high esteem that it would almost take a little bit of the heat off of what he wants to do in New York. And he would have all the upside of coming to the Knicks, where if he won a title, here, it would be one of the greatest accomplishments that any individual player has had in NBA history. And he would quite literally go down as, like, maybe one of, like, the 20 or 30 greatest people in the history of New York. Like, I really genuinely believe it would be that type of impact. And it would sort of eliminate all the downside, because he already did it. Like, he pulled off the 3-1 comeback in insane circumstances in Golden State. So I know that's a lot of verbal vomit, but basically what I'm saying is I think it could be a positive for the Knicks if they ripped off three games in a row, I think is my final conclusion on it.
I just feel like it could go either way. You know what I mean? Like, even if they lose tonight, even if Durant, you know, comes back and it's still not enough. Cause, I mean, honestly, at this point, you know, Toronto is just, like, gone supernova at this point. I mean, they're just ridiculous. They're like a finely tuned machine, you know, just firing on all cylinders, to throw as many cliches as I can in there at once. But they're insane. And it's possible that maybe even with Durant, you know, and with how rusty he would be and whatever, that they'll just walk into this and still not be able to beat Toronto, just because Toronto's, you know, playing on such a high level right now. But either way, I could, you know, I'm kind of with you. I could see it going one way or the other. Either way, I think, though, that, you know, Durant, no matter what the outcome of this series is, no matter what his decision is, he's going to catch heat from the media and stuff, from somebody. You know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be someone that's going to hate on him for what he does. You know, whether it's local media in Golden State, whether it's, you know, the hot takers, you know, Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless or whatever the world, you know, some of them are going to be like, oh my God, this is the best decision of all time. Some of them are going to be like, oh my God, this is, you know, I can't believe he did this. What a disgrace. His legacy is ruined. But I think he's going to be justified no matter what. You know, like you said, if they rip off the three games, then he can be like, okay, I came back. I proved my worth finally in Golden State, you know, after being shit on for so long here, essentially. I mean, cause they just, the fans there never quite loved him like they love Steph or even like they love Clay or Draymond. You know what I mean? Just cause they weren't like their guys, you know, or just cause he wasn't one of their guys, but you know, he could be kind of vindicated in that way and be like, I've accomplished what I wanted to. I got three titles here. You know, clearly they'll be fine without me. They might just have to retool a little bit, but these guys know what they're doing and I can move on and try to, you know, do something different with my career. Or the flip side is even if they lose with him, it's not like then he didn't accomplish anything. He still won two titles, still won two finals MVPs. He came back hobbled, which looks good for him, you know, in the eyes of public perception, like, oh, he pushed himself back from this like calf injury to, you know, come back and try to help Golden State when they were down 3-1 and just wasn't enough because Toronto was operating so well. But nobody should, like, if anybody looks at it objectively, it's still, even if they lose, nobody should look at him and be like, he didn't accomplish anything in Golden State. And also shouldn't be like, oh, he was treated fantastic in Golden State and was, you know, treated like a king there, because he never really was. It's always been Steph Curry's team and all that. So that's kind of my extended diatribe on this. I think no matter what, you could find an angle, you know, you could find a way to look at it no matter what and be like, you know, Durant's justified or Durant's not justified. But I think no matter what, he'd have a strong case for being justified leaving Golden State, no matter what the outcome of this finals is. But I do give him props for trying to come back and not essentially shutting himself down for the year and being like, even if he was healthy, being like, I'm done here, I'm leaving, so I'm not even going to try to come back. You know, I give him props for at least trying to give it a go tonight.
Yeah, this is basically a long-winded way of both of us saying we know nothing, but there are a lot of implications either way, depending on Kevin Durant's psyche, which no one can really understand for sure. But I mean, just from a pure, like, take the Knicks out of it, just from a theater perspective, I'm really like, this is pretty awesome. Like, this is almost like my best case scenario for the finals. Like, Raptors build up like a big lead and sort of as like just inherently disgusted as I would be, to see the Warriors win another one. And it's like this weird thing where like, I genuinely like all the Warriors as individuals. I'm just tired of seeing them win every year. At least now it stacks so far against them. And even if they win these next two games, they'd still have to come back to just an insane Toronto for game seven. It's shaping up to be quite the finish, which I'm happy about that the Warriors, I mean, and who knows, maybe Durant comes back tonight. He's at like 60% and Toronto runs away with it because he's just not even close to being ready to play and it screws up any type of rhythm they have. But I think this is going to be a really, really good game regardless. And I sort of think the finals comes down to tonight. Like either Toronto ends it or the Warriors are going to rip off three in a row.
Yeah, I think there's a strong case to be made for that because you feel like if the Warriors manage to force it back to Oracle, you know, they'd have that crowd behind them. Presumably if they win this game in Toronto, then they're going to have, it would mean that Durant had a, you know, a substantially positive impact on the game and didn't look, you know, rusty or whatever after being off. And so that would mean that they'd be essentially at the height of their power going back home. So I would almost guarantee that they would win that game because there's nothing quite like when they're rolling at home. And then, you know, if it got to game seven, then in Toronto, it might already be past the point of no return where Golden State's grabs the series momentum so hard at that point that, you know, there's no way for Toronto to pull it out, but I guess we'll see. I'm kind of with you, though. I think it's either it, like this game five against, you know, the Warriors with Durant is going to be really important for Toronto because, I mean, it sounds stupid to say. It's like, what's that guy's name? Rashad Phillips or whatever, the guy on Twitter made the tweet about, like, before the series being like, game one, game five, and game seven would be the really important ones for Toronto in this series. Like, yeah, no shit. That's their big home games, idiot. Like, yeah. Of course those are important. So, you know, I think, though, that if they don't win this game, that there's a much greater chance of Golden State winning it, you know, than there wouldn't be otherwise. Or there's, I just feel like I'm talking in a stupid circle here. I really think it's important that they win this game, though, because there's a real chance that Golden State could snatch momentum then.
Yeah. I thought initially you were saying it's important Golden State wins this game, and I was just doing the
recovery. Yeah, I started saying that, and then I realized, yeah, like, that's obvious, but it's important that Toronto win this one, because it's going to be difficult to win the next ones. Yeah, that's where I was getting at. I started talking in a circle in my brain. It happens sometimes, but yeah.
1-5-7, baby. All right. With that, we will we'll wrap up this edition of Locked On Knicks. We'll come back later this week. We are going to, again, I think I mentioned it, we're going to have the Locked On Nets guys on, debate the Knicks package against the Nets. And, like, I don't even know, like, how essential that is, but I like talking to those guys, and I like getting into arguments with them. So we'll have that for you. And then, we'll do a mailbag later this week. I'll put out a tweet for that, right as we post this episode. So, two things to look forward to. In case you missed it, we had Ian Begley on last week, Alex, and he was pretty great. He gave us some notes on Kevin Durant and how crucial it is the Knicks get a second star if they want him, and putting the idea out there, which is good because it sort of fueled this entire episode, that the Knicks are probably more likely to trade that number 3 pick than keep it. So in case you missed that, our biggest guest ever, probably, so be sure to check it out. Until then, be well, and we'll talk to you soon.